So today we're going to be looking a little bit at anxiety and stress and just discussing what it would look like in the body and the mind and with emotions, and as well as maybe just discuss some mindful ways which we can just deal a little bit more skillfully with anxiety and stress. These are two things that everyone experiences at any time of their lives. Chronic stress is a real problem in today's society. And anxiety is often overlooked, and it's also a topic that I don't think we talk enough about. Anxiety is really something real, and a lot of people suffer from anxiety, and it often goes undiagnosed, especially if you've got maybe an anxiety disorder. And I think it's a part of mental health that people don't speak about enough. So before we start talking about it, let's also just consider this a practice. So also just maybe sitting upright or just changing your posture so that you can adopt a posture of awareness and being present to what we are going to be discussing now. And also just practicing deep mindful listening. So anxiety can be defined as intense, excessive and persistent worry and fear. So with anxiety, there's really a lot of rumination, which means overthinking. And at the base of it, there's this worry and this fear that things are not going to turn out right. And I'm worrying about a lot of things that might never happen. But it's also very real to the person. Now, stress is your body's way of responding to any kind of demand or threat. So it's really there for when you are in danger, whether it's real or imagined. Your body's defenses kick in, and it's actually there to keep you safe. It's an automatic process, and I will be explaining it a little bit later in more detail. But it's stress on its own is not a bad thing, and it's really there to keep us safe. But the problem is that we often keep stressing. So there's this chronic stress of never releasing the things that we are worried about, and that we are under this constant pressure, and that will be known as chronic stress. So anxiety and stress, and we've now spoken a lot about the body, and this whole course has really been on becoming intimately acquainted with your body. And anxiety and sits in your body. Stress sits in your body. So we often experience them first in our bodies and then in our minds. So these physical signs can really be an early warning signal that, anxiety is coming on. And therefore, it's so important, and why I've been stressing this so much, is to get to know your body and get to know what it's trying to tell you. And this is really, really helpful. So if you know that your anxiety sits in your chest area and you become familiar with it, then you will know, and you're checking in throughout the day and you're doing many body scans and you're taking pauses, small pauses during the day, then you will be able to identify, but yes, stress, or yes, anxiety, the same stress, you know where your stress sits in your body. So that is really the very first step, is to know, but what sensations is accompanied by my anxiety and my stress? And that can be many things: dry mouth, headaches, flushed hot cheeks, maybe shaking hands, maybe there's a tightness or soreness of your throat, aching jaw, backache, butterflies in your tummy, excessive sweating, heartburn, indigestion, cramps, stomach cramps. So there are many different sensations that can really be your cue that something's up. Now, anxiety is obviously in the mind and in your emotions as well. So with your sensations in your body, there's obviously all these thoughts in your head. Am I doing it right? I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm worried about this, and all these, you know, these stories that we kind of make up in our mind. And the more we think about these worst case scenarios, because it's often worst case scenarios, the more the tension in the body deepens. And then obviously with that, there's emotion. So sadness, anger, frustration, a feeling of being overwhelmed, that's very real. So it's, again, it's the triangle of awareness, of body sensations, of what's happening in your thought life, as well as what's happening within your emotions. Now, we have two nervous systems in our body called the parasympathetic system and the sympathetic system. Now, how it works is your sympathetic nervous system is the system that gets you ready for fight, flight, and freeze. So let's say there has been a stimuli, there has been a trigger. Someone has asked you, let's say, to talk in front of the staff and to explain the project that you're busy with, and immediately your nervous system is activated into fight, flight, and freeze, and you are getting nervous because, and then there's these thoughts, but I can't do it, and I'm shy, and I stutter when I talk in front of people, and the nervous system is really setting you up, so you either fight, flight, or freeze. And what happens is, on its own, it's not bad, you know. Let's say, for example, back in the day when a lion was chasing you, or you saw a lion, your nervous system automatically would go into fight, flight, and freeze, and it will be there to save you. But now, in this scenario that I've now explained regarding the public speaking, there's a perceived threat here. So it's not really a real threat. It's a threat that's in your mind, which then sets off the exact same response in your body as if it is a real threat. Now, stress, if you think chronic stress, keeps you in your fight, flight, and freeze. And when you're in your fight and your flight response, then that is when the anxiety kicks in, you're overwhelmed, there's kind of these chaotic responses, you've got these outbursts, maybe, you know, emotional, aggressive, you crying or you're screaming at the people around you, there's a lot of rage. There could even be like a lot of rigidness of things has to work in a certain way. That's also where your obsessive compulsive behaviors or thoughts come in. There might be overeating, addictions, being very impulsive. So with your fight and flight responses, you can see that there's a lot of unhealthy coping going on. With your freeze response, it's just the opposite. You disconnect completely. You're not present, you almost come across as being unavailable and shut down, people can't approach you, you seem unapproachable, you come across as unapproachable, there might be memory loss, there's almost this no display of emotions, like this flatness, you're basically separating yourself from yourself, from your feelings and your emotions. So the freeze response is exactly what it says. It's almost like you're living in a frozen state. So you can see that living in fight, flight, and freeze cannot be healthy. And we are often on autopilot also. And then we are not even aware that we're within this fight, flight, and freeze. And this is your sympathetic nervous system trying to keep you safe. So what the parasympathetic nervous system is, this is also the system that we call our rest and our digest. And this is the system where you get out of your sympathetic system. So it's the system where you want to be. It's the system where you are feeling relaxed and calm and in control. Now, where mindfulness comes in and breathing is very much to take you out of your sympathetic system, your fight, flight, and freeze system, into your parasympathetic system, which is your rest and digest. And this is also the space where you emotionally regulate it. You can self-soothe. you know exactly what's going on and what you need to do in order to get into the system. And mindfulness, if you think just of nice deep breathing, maybe, you know, just sitting and just following your breath can get you out of this aroused state of fight flight or this hypo aroused, which is your freeze state. So coming into your body, that is the big thing, is back into your body, out of your mind, will help you in the long run. I had a very interesting experience yesterday with my oldest son. We're now busy doing his schoolwork at home. He's my sensitive child, and he is ADD. He's also got a lot of sensory issues, if I can put it that way. So very sensitive, suffers from anxiety. He's a perfectionist. And I could just see immediately when he realized he has to start working and doing schoolwork and stuff, how hyper-aroused he became. And just felt to me at a stage that everything was irritating him. His clothes was too tight, and his breathing was shallow, and it really throughout the morning as we was doing it was kind of like getting worse and worse and worse. And then we stopped at lunchtime, and after lunch he came into my room and he was crying, and all that I did, I said to him, "Come lie here by me." So it's quite cold, yeah. Actually, very cold, not quite. And he came and he sat next to me, or lay next to me. And all that I did is we had a nice warm blanket around us, is I held him. And what I want to say about this is sometimes breathing and grounding is not going to work. Sometimes your breath is not going to ground you. Because in that instance, if I'd said to him, "Aiden, come, let's breathe. It wasn't going to help him. He needed physical comfort. He needed self-soothing, because that's actually, or soothing, that's actually what it was, the comfort of him lying next to me with a warm blanket around him. And slowly, I could just feel his body relax. I could feel how his breath just was returning to normal. So when we think of anchor points, the breath is not always an anchor point. I remember when I was on doing my training and we were on a retreat, and one of the women said, but her brother's asthmatic and the breath is not his friend. And obviously, you know, a person can work with that, you know, to kind of get to the point where the breath is your friend and it's not the enemy. But for some people, breathing is not their first go-to. And it can be, you know, just feeling your feet on the ground, or it can be your senses, or it can be something as soothing as hugging, you know, getting a hug from your mom. So a person needs to find different anchor points, and it's okay if the breath is not your go-to. It's okay if you struggle with the breath. I did some therapy with a patient that was very anxious, and the first thing he said to me when we started with the mindfulness was, don't use my breath. It actually made him anxious, just thinking that he needs to use his breath. And we worked on other anchor points, other grounding points. So you don't necessarily need to use the breath as an anchor to kind of get out of this anxious mode, out of your sympathetic nervous system into your parasympathetic nervous systems. You can use objects that's outside you at first. And yes, once you are grounded and you back into your body, then definitely a person can explore the breath. And that's what I did with Aiden. Once we sat down to start the afternoon session, we did a bit of grounding and I did a bit of breathing with him, and then he was okay. He was open to it. So it's a skill. It's being skillful. It's about knowing yourself and knowing what you need and what you don't need in the moment. And that's all about being present. Okay, so when it comes to anxiety and stress, the big thing is to know where it sits in your body, what thoughts are usually with it, what emotions comes with it, and then to skillfully, once you know that this is anxiety and I'm busy stressing, then to skillfully choose, what do I need right now? So I'm going to finish off with this beautiful poem called Fire. What makes a fire burn is space between the logs, a breathing space. Too much of a good thing, too many logs packed in too tight, can douse the flames almost as surely as a pail of water would. So building fires requires attention to the spaces in between as much as to the wood. When we are able to build open spaces, the same way we have learned to pile on the logs, then we can come to see how it is fuel and absence of the fuel together that makes fire possible. We only need to lay a log lightly from time to time. A fire grows simply because the space is there, with openings in which the flame that knows just how it wants to burn can find its way.